Right now it is time to bring in Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, and I have to thank Arthur in advance. We talked about eggnog and eggnog like a dessert. This weekend I was getting my hair cut, and they'd asked me if I'd like something to drink, and I said, sure, do you have any eggnog? And they did. They had Ronnie Brook Farm eggnog, which is local, and I tell you, it is the best eggnog I've ever had. So hats off to Ronnie Brook Farm.
Pretty long line on Saturday. Maybe that was why.
It was amazing eggnog. Amazing.
Well, they do have good milk.
Yeah,
to start.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Good morning.
Good morning. This is a week filled with food tradition. I mean, if you ate everything that was traditional this week, God bless you. Let's start with Hanukkah was the first.
Yeah.
We always say the first candle of Hanukkah
yesterday
was last night.
Yeah.
And as I explained a few weeks ago, Hanukkah is all about olive oil. So, except that most Americans are only familiar with Eastern European Jewish food traditions, Polish, Ukrainian, Russian, even German, Austrian. My family is from what was the Austrian Empire, hence Schwartz, which means black in Austrian, and German as well, but spelled a little different. Anyway, point is, the holiday has become about frying food. Now, if you lived in the Mediterranean and Jewish, and it was Hanukkah, you would have easy access to olive oil. It's probably, could be anyway, if not your number one fat choice, your number two fat choice for frying. And because they do, of course, have other oils for frying. I mean, oil, even today, olive oil is a bit precious to use for the deep fat frying that Hanukkah calls for, the Hanukkah dishes call for. So I noticed these days, however, that instead of latkes, potato pancakes, which are unquestionably Eastern European, instead of making potato pancakes fried in some kind of seed oil, usually, nobody uses chicken fat anymore, has given over to sufganiyot, which are jelly donuts, deep fried, of course. They're what, you know, I grew up with these kind of donuts. Not that we never called them sufganiyot, they were just jelly donuts, or custard donuts, which I like eat much better than jelly donuts, which is to say, this ball of dough, deep fried on both sides, and then it comes out, and with a and you stuff it with usually with a bag, you know, pastry bag, and you have jelly, and you stuff it with jelly. But you can also stuff it with custard. And there's a bakery in my neighborhood, in fact, not at all Jewish, that makes incredible custard.
Your phone is cutting out, Arthur.
My phone is cutting out?
Your phone is... I can barely understand what you're saying.
Well, I don't know why, because I haven't changed my position or phone position. Is that better?
It's back. It's back.
Okay, it was something with the system. I'm sorry. I was talking about sufganiyot, which are jelly donuts. And, of course, an Israeli, you can tell by the word, it's a Hebrew word. But, hello, you there?
I'm here.
Oh, okay, because I just heard a buzz. Anyway, sufganiyot have become incredibly popular in New York City, and there are both kosher bakeries and non-kosher bakeries that sell them. And I think that's way more accessible, of course, to go out and buy some donuts than to have to fry potato pancakes. And even I, who love potato pancakes and was in charge of grating potatoes for potato pancakes at Hanukkah. Hanukkah was my grandmother's big entertaining holiday. She had always had an open house on the Sunday of Hanukkah. It's when I got my Hanukkah presents. It's when my cousins got their Hanukkah presents. And people came in and out all day, and we stood and fried potato pancakes. I don't want to do that now. So, in fact, I went out and bought some matzah meal, and I'm going to make matzah meal pancakes, which is just, you know, stirring up matzah meal with eggs and a little water, salt. I don't make them sweet, just a big pinch of salt. And I guess I could look up the formula. It's in my Jewish book, Arthur Schwartz's Jewish Home Cooking, and it indeed is my home cooking. And I make matzo meal pancakes when I crave them, not just for Hanukkah. But I was thinking, you know, it's easy to do. I love them. If we're only going to be four people, if they want them sweet, they can put jam or sugar on them. I like them just the way they are. A little extra salt when I get to the table. But anyway, so frying is a big deal this week. Brooklyn will smell like frying. We have a lot of Hanukkah celebrations around here.
Well, I have to tell you, Arthur, I'll pick potato pancakes over jelly donuts any day.
Oh, you see, I love potato pancakes. I never, ever enjoy them eating them in a restaurant.
No.
Because they're not my potato pancakes. Yeah. Which is to say, my grandmother's potato pancakes, which were thin, crisp around the edges, grated potato. But we did it by hand until my grandmother got a blender. And then in the end, by the way, she lived long enough and she was young enough to own a food processor. So we learned how to do the potatoes in the food processor. It made life a lot easier. However, you still have to stand and fry, and a potato pancake is still at its best when it comes out of the pan.
Yep.
And not reheated later on, or put into a 200-degree oven and held.
Yep.
So my job always was to stand and fry when I got older. And then I got really angry when they didn't save me any of the pancakes I was sending to the table.
You didn't cheat?
You know,
I used to cheat all the time.
I do cheat in the beginning because those are the worst pancakes. It doesn't matter how perfect you get the oil. I've never gotten the first pancake that was worth sending to the table. So, of course, I ate it. And maybe two or three.
Yeah.
And, of course, I do squeeze out the potatoes, which makes them more even. And I always use russet potatoes, which are a dryish potato. So it evens it all out, so to speak. You don't have to worry too much about the batter being too thin because of that. But anyway, I want to move on to the traditions of Catholics. I don't know. Are there any Protestant food traditions? This is my Jewish prejudice, you understand. You know, according to my grandfather once said to me, I made these sandwiches and they weren't good. And my grandfather said to me, listen, a Jewish sandwich has more meat than bread. A Gentile sandwich has more bread than meat. So our idea of a Protestant sandwich, which is what he meant, was white bread with cucumber and butter. You know, that was our image of, you know, what the wasps ate. But anyway, Catholics in Irish and Italians, anyway, the ones that I grew up with, those Catholics, and certainly Eastern European Catholics, all have very heavy, Polish people, for instance, have very heavy Christmas food traditions. And I was privy to going to, it's got to be almost 30 years ago, my first Christmas Eve fish dinner. Now, you have to understand that in the U.S., this is now known as the Feast of the Seven Fishes. I did a little research, and anybody can do this. There's a Wikipedia page for the Feast of the Seven Fishes, on which it says that the first mention of this feast meal by name like that was in 1983 in the Philadelphia Inquirer. So I do not remember, having grown up with many Italians, Southern Italians, from Calabria, from Puglia, Varese, from Naples, none of them counted the number of dishes back when. Nowadays, it's come to seven. Now, where does this number seven come from? There are speculation about blah, blah. My own point of view is that seven is a mystical number because it's a combination of four, as in the four corners of the earth, and many other fours that you can think of, and three, which is like the Trinity. It's another mystical number. So together it makes seven. Anyway, that's where the seven fishes come from, in my estimation, but you know, there are other theories about where the seven comes from. So about 30 years ago, I went to my first vigilia, and that's what it's called correctly. It's the vigil leading up to midnight when it's Christmas. This is the Christmas Eve dinner. And it's because it's all fish, because you're not supposed to eat, if you're Catholic, if you're, you know, really observant Catholic, you're not supposed to eat meat the day before you're going to feast, which, by the way, makes good nutritional sense as well. So you have a fish dinner leading you, and it's a long fish dinner because it's got to take you to midnight when you all excuse yourselves from the table and go to church for midnight mass. Well, so maybe you leave the table at 11:30 until you walk over to church and get into your pew. It's midnight. So the first one that I went to, it was very funny because the first course was smoked salmon fish. The second was one of those 1950s cold so-called souffle of salmon roe. You remember those?
Yes.
I'm old enough to remember those.
No, yes, I remember those.
Yeah. I bet you I could find the recipe for it, and it wouldn't be a bad thing either. And then we went on to herring. And I'm saying, why are we eating pickled herring? This I said out loud to the family that I was with, who had, you know, had invited me to this dinner. And they said, well, our father, long gone, loved herring, so we have herring in honor of him. And then somebody chirped up and she said, you know, it's a cousin of anchovies. So that made it okay. And then we went on, after these totally non-traditional fish courses, three of them, we went on to the traditional fish courses, which usually include, and here it did too, some kind of salt cod dish. Now, personally, I love baked salt cod with potatoes, a little bit of tomato, not tomato sauce, but just sort of crushed up tomato or diced, and you don't have fresh tomatoes at Christmas time, so it's always sort of crushed up a little tomato, and oregano, a little oregano, and olive oil, and you put it in the oven, and I once made this and ate the whole casserole myself. That's how much I like this. It's also very good reheated, although I like it when it's just done better. Or you could make, and then this is very easy, I happen to love, do you like bacala?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. Now, my only issue with bacala is that most people these days soak it too long, and it doesn't taste like bacala anymore. In fact, I saw on TV recently somebody soaking it for several days. And to me, that's not appropriate. But what I do it at least a day, and I don't just soak it. While I'm in the kitchen with it, I will put the bowl with the bacala in the sink and let cold water run into the bowl, so it's sort of running water. In Italy, that's what you go to the market to buy your bacala for Christmas. They have it all pre-soaked, and it's in a big stainless steel trough that has running water because they have to, you know, reconstitute so much at this time of the year that they have to do it this way. With running water, it goes faster. But, you know, I still want a little saltiness and maybe even a slight funkiness. For funkiness, you got to go to other products. There are all kinds of bacala. Stoccofisso is a little stinky. Salt cod is real cod, salted and air dried whereas tocofiso is less salty and stinkier because it's not so much salt. And I think it's just air dried. Anyway, I have never seen tocofiso for sale in the U.S. You barely find it even these days in Italy because it's not very popular. But baccalà is. And baccalà is a traditional dish for all these interior parts of southern Italy. They didn't have access to fresh fish daily. These days, people do in the interior because there are great roads. You can go from the sea to the middle of landlocked mountains in less than an hour. So that's baccalà salad is what you find. Now, you soak your baccalà, or in fact, I have seen pre-soaked baccalà sold in plastic bags in the U.S., whichever. You just toss it with really good olive oil, and by the way, here comes Hanukkah. This is the season for new olive oil, meaning the harvests of olive oil in December, still continuing in some parts of Italy. In Sicily, it starts in late September and goes into October. You move up. Tuscany is just finishing now. I just, in fact, got a shipment of new olive oil from my friend Pamela Sheldon Johns. Now, if you want her oil, just look up Pamela Sheldon Johns, or the name of her property in right outside Siena in Montepulciano, where the wine comes from, is Poggio, P-O-G-G-I-O, Poggio, which means a well in Tuscan dialect, Poggio Etrusco, E-T-R-U-S-C-O. Poggio Etrusco, and you can look it up online and you can order directly from Pamela. In any case, salt cod, parsley, I like some hot pepper, I like lemon juice better than vinegar, but vinegar is fine, and you want to put some diced olives in that, you can, not tomato, and it's delicious, just cold, made ahead of time. That's another dish. Another one, maybe the most popular, after spaghetti with tomato sauce, maybe the most popular Italian pasta, which is spaghetti, linguine, whatever, with clam sauce. That's actually a very standard Christmas Eve dish, both in Italy and here in the U.S. Clams have gotten very expensive, but you want to splurge on Christmas Eve. And if you do it with fresh clams, it's sort of an unbelievably good dish. And it requires clams and good olive oil. So you use your best extra virgin for this. Fresh parsley, garlic. I like a lot of garlic. And all you do is saute the garlic lightly in your olive oil. Add clams in the shell, scrubbed. Or mussels, by the way. You can make spaghetti with a la cozze, with mussels, cozze mussels. And you put them in the pot with the oil and the garlic. You don't need any white wine, but if you want to splash your white wine, and you happen to have an open bottle, nice dry white wine, put it in a quarter of a cup, just a little moisture at the bottom of the pot. And cover the pot and steam the mussels or the clams open. They give off a lot of liquid, which is your sauce, basically. Take them out of the pot. If you want to shell them, you can. I always save a few to garnish the top so you know what's in there. And put the clam or mussel meat back in with the broth, which is also flavored, as you saw, with garlic and oil. Lots of oil, by the way. And then make your pasta and put the pasta in the sauce for a few minutes. I don't ever find the need to add pasta cooking water here, but if it looks a little dry or maybe you want to thicken it a little bit, that pasta cooking water will do the job. So you put in a couple spoons of pasta cooking water and let the pasta, by the way, which is a little bit underdone, finish cooking in the juices of the clams or the mussels. And that's it. Do we say salt? I like hot pepper. And parsley. I happen to like a lot of parsley on this. I also like a lot of hot pepper. But in this case, you could put the hot pepper on at the table if some other people don't like the hot pepper. It's a good dish to make for a crowd, too. So I think people like it for that reason as well. What else do they... This is something that I don't know anybody who makes it anymore. Vinforza. Insalata Vinforza, which is a cauliflower salad. Now, it's called reinforce, because you keep adding. You know what? I say very few people make it, but the people I know in Italy who make it all make it as almost as decoration. It's very colorful. And as you walk by the buffet or your credenza, whatever it is, you grab an olive, you grab a piece of very well-dressed cauliflower, you get a piece of bread and put one of the anchovies on, and let me see if I can find my, because it's important here for Christmas. Insalata di Rinforza. So I always, there are other explanations for the name Rinforza, but mine is, you know, you keep adding the, oh, there's also, by the way, a pickled peppers on it. That's another thing you can grab if you're feeling noshy in the afternoon. And it's out. None of this stuff is going to spoil. It doesn't have to be refrigerated. So here's the thing. Cauliflower. Have you noticed that cauliflower is very expensive again? I don't know what that's about, but the other day I was going to buy a cauliflower. I'm into cauliflower lately, but it's not $8 a head, so, or $9 a head. Thanksgiving, I understood. It was crazy expensive. But why is it crazy expensive now? I don't know. But anyway, what you want to do is you want to take a medium head of cauliflower and steam it. I like to steam vegetables for various reasons, but you can boil it if you want. And then put that out in a bowl, and add a half a cup of pickled red pepper strips. Not hot peppers, sweet peppers. If you want to buy them in a jar, go ahead. But slice them into strips about a quarter inch wide, half inch wide, and then add to that a bunch of other pickled vegetables. Now, what you can do is buy giardiniera, which is a mixed pickled vegetables. A lot of Italian delis, markets sell it, and you can just buy like a pint container, or you can buy it in a jar. The jar ones are fine. It's usually carrots, celery, little sour pickles, and you scatter those on top of your steamed cauliflower, and then you add some olives. You can pit them if you want, but they don't have to be. I like to use a mix of green olives and purple olives. I usually have gaeta here. Those are, by the way, are very easy to pit. You squeeze them and the pit pops out. They're like a freestone olive. But I like those big green Sicilian ones, too. And that's it. And then you dress this with oil, vinegar, pepper, salt, and you put it on a platter, and you decorate it with anchovies. So, I don't know. Really, if you're a vegetarian, this could be lunch with some good bread. You could add some nice olive oil to put on the bread, too. But that's called insalata di rinforzo. I keep saying rinforza, but maybe it is rinforzo. I don't know if it's masculine or feminine. But maybe it's not even an agreeable word. So that's it. What else do we have on New Year's Eve? What are you going to... I mean, Christmas Eve. Do you celebrate Christmas Eve?
I cook. I used to celebrate Christmas Eve when, you know, the old days when huge families, 50 to 60 people would get together. And we'd go to different houses.
Oh my!
We'd go to different houses. Well, I had my grandmother and her three sisters, and we had the whole family. And because my father was Jewish, not only did we get the Christian food, we got the Jewish food, because they all learned they could cook anything, these women.
Well, I had an aunt who was a Catholic wannabe, and she made Christmas dinner. So I always had Christmas. We always went to my aunt. I mean, we didn't go out for Chinese on Christmas Day. we went to Aunt Pauline for Christmas Day. And that was my exposure to a Christmas tree, to Christmas foods. I mean, she used to make, I don't know if anybody else makes this for Christmas, but she used to make a stuffed whole fresh ham, which is basically this gargantuan roast. But it was boned out, and where the bone was in the middle, she made this sensational stuffing. I guess nowadays you're not supposed to make stuffing anymore. It's too many people die from stuffing or something. Because people don't handle it correctly, you know. For instance, if you made a big, it was always hot and with gravy at my aunt's house. But I know a lot of people who would just put, you know, make this and let it sit, and the meat outside would cool down substantially, but the inside might not, and that it might be at the perfect temperature for bacterial growth, and that's what people get sick on. So anyway, I'm looking forward to Christmas. We're having a big Chinese feast. You already have it plotted out. Bunch of Jews going out for Chinese food on Christmas Day. And Christmas Eve, we haven't planned yet. But we are going to have matzo meal pancakes for Hanukkah. And also, I'm going to go check out the bakery that makes these wonderful filled donuts. If they have, they don't always have them. I don't know. That maybe this time of the year they will. And also a very short drive from me, like maybe 10 minutes. Although I have to go with somebody because I won't be able to park. Is a kosher bakery that is famous for sufganiyot. So, and they have all kinds of flavors. I think they even have a Nutella sufganiyot, which I might like. Fried donut filled with Nutella.
I will definitely be making potato pancakes over the course of the next couple of days.
I will think of you.
And I will also make some turkey, and I'm going to have some roast beef for Christmas, for Christmas Eve.
Ooh. Yeah, you know, I've considered getting a prime rib roast, but then I have to invite too many people over to it. I don't know. I guess we could eat it for a few days. That's always the way around here.
I just get a cowboy rib roast, and you take it off the bone, and you cook it, and it comes out perfect, and you put it in half, and it's perfect for two people. Perfect.
What do you do with the bone?
I save the bone, and I make bone broth with it afterwards.
You make bone broth?
Yeah. I love bone broth. I
make bone broth, but I make it with chicken.
Yeah. Okay, I make it probably four times a year. It's terrific.
Oh, I can't not have broth in the freezer. I now have several quarts in the freezer because I think I told you I have a new supermarket in the neighborhood, and they're only 99 cents a pound for backs. They sell a lot of chicken breasts there.
I have countless numbers of in my freezer.
Yeah.
Of those ice cube trays that are filled with bone broth.
So
and chicken
listen,
breasts.
I was very happy to have my broth at hand yesterday, when I realized I didn't have I needed a vegetable, okay, for lunch, and I made braised celery using my, because I had just bought this big bunch of celery, and you know, I don't want to go into my celery issues, but I wanted to use up the nice, beautiful outside ribs before they wilted. So it was beautiful. So I cut them into, I would say, 2 to 3 inch lengths, sautéed them briefly in some butter, and then added just enough of my beautiful chicken broth to cover them, barely cover them, covered the pan, let them simmer for about 15 minutes. They were almost tender, really sort of tender. And so I let it finish cooking without the cover to reduce the liquid and butter. And then I added literally 3 tablespoons of cream, heavy cream. Boy, was that good.
Oh, sounds good. Sounds good.
A very luxurious vegetable. I mentioned it to a friend last night, and he said, oh, that used to be on French menus all the time. I haven't seen that in 30 years. Well, I said, come over next week. I'll make it again.
Okay.
It's a very easy thing to do.
All right. Well, Merry Christmas, Arthur, and happy Hanukkah.
Too. Right. We're not going to speak until after Christmas.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, Merry Christmas to everyone.
All right. Take care, Arthur. Bye. Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, here on The Breakfast Club on Robin Hood Radio, robinhoodradio.com.
The food maven, Hillsdale Home Chef. More information, 518-325-7000, hgshomechef.com.